Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Hi, Christy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. It's our first week of a semester, and so it's always a little crazy.
Yep.
But overall, I'm doing really well. Has your semester started yet, or you start next week?
Yeah, we start next week. It's been a whirlwind of I've gotten very good at Excel spreadsheets since I've taken on the chair role. I just kind of want our listeners to know, this is our third episode within the chapter of skills, and it is about, these are the reflective responding skills. So we've done tracking, we've done reflection of content, and so now is reflection of feeling. And so we're going to kind of break it up into the what it is, why we do it, and how to do it, and examples, and maybe some really great oops moments because we get it wrong. So I think Christy, I want you to add in on this, but when we think about what reflecting emotions is, it's really an effort. I think it takes a lot of effort personally. I think it takes a lot of effort for me to be present. I think doing play therapy is much harder for me because kids aren't always verbalizing what they're feeling. It's very rare that they're going to verbalize what they're feeling. And so it takes some leaps of faith and intuition and trusting yourself. In addition to, I think what the crux of it is that you're really watching and connecting with this child to try and understand what it is that they are feeling and experiencing within the playroom and in those moments, because it's not always the same feeling throughout. And I think a lot of times my own students feel as if they're interpreting or judging or placing something on a child that isn't accurate.
Well, and I think they sometimes feel that way because the child is not stating like an adult would state, I feel this way, or I'm thinking this, but the child is playing that out, or the intensity in which they're playing something, or their facial expressions,
their body language,
or their way their body is conveying
their tone.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same way too, even with adults, we have to teach, we hope that our students will, you know, you can have a client say, no, I'm really happy, and they're crying. And so you're trusting your judgment and you're like, well, I don't really think maybe you're as happy as you say you are. So when we reflect feeling, it is really about picking up on those nuances. Mm-hmm. And we are a society that asks questions. And so it can be very difficult to switch in from, are you feeling sad, to you're feeling sad. And
well, there's more safety in the question.
There's more
the
safety
person
in the question.
Stating it. Unfortunately, on the converse, the message to the child is you're really hard to understand, mm-hmm. which is why we try to get away from the Q&A in really all therapy sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It also conveys uncertainty on your part.
Right.
And like trust in yourself. And so it is a leap of faith to go in and just state it out loud and really, you know, recognize and name it for the client. Because the other thing I know for me personally, I'm trying to word this in a way, in my family, thought was really valued and feeling was not as I think comfortable for everyone. And I'm a feeler by nature, and so I feel deeply and I feel big. And so the messages I internalized, intentional or unintentional, is that feelings are not okay, thoughts are valued more. Right? So as a kid, I didn't grow up with a lot of feeling words or like really a good feeling vocabulary to be able to convey those to other people because I felt judged and I felt accepted. Right. And I'm not saying this was intentional or any of those things. I think it was part of the generation I grew up in, you know, and the generation my parents grew up in of like what was allowed and not allowed. And so I just internalized a lot of messages around feelings and other things. So I know in previous podcasts we talked about, you know, like when I was first learning, this was one of the hardest skills for me to learn because my feeling vocabulary was pretty limited. And so I find my students are sometimes in that same boat that they are very comfortable with certain sets of emotions and very uncomfortable with other sets of emotions. And so, you know.
When I think it goes back to the importance of understanding ourselves and the messages that we received around life, but also specifically for this episode around feelings and what messages did we receive so that we're not necessarily putting those messages onto kids? Because we talk, and Dr. Lander talks about this a lot, is that kids are wonderful observers and terrible interpreters, right? So your family may not have meant to put those messages out there. A message I received that was pointed out to me in our doc program was growing up in the South, women and anger weren't great. And so when I gravitate less towards anger, am I sending that message that their anger isn't okay? And so really kind of exploring yourself, and it's helpful, I think group therapy, group counseling, as well as individual counseling can really help you explore those things. And supervision, because you may see patterns with your supervisor that perhaps you didn't see before. And one thing too that we tell our students is that if you have enough to ask the question, then you have enough to make the statement. So instead of saying, like, I think that doesn't necessarily go for how are you feeling right now? That's a very broad and places it on a child, which a child may not know. But if you're going to say, how you see, are you sad right now? There's something that you're picking up from that child that reflect that makes you think that they're sad. And so take that leap of faith. I really try and hone in on not necessarily the play or the toys they're playing with. I think that sometimes people may be saying or expressing that, oh, if they play with the bot bag or they play with the gun, right? I did a whole research project on toy guns, and often toy guns are not used as aggression. They're used for mass, like, and this is a thematic thing, but mastery or relationship building. So if we automatically assume, oh, you have a gun, that must mean you're angry, then we're missing what's happening. So it's less about the toys that they're playing with, but how they are engaging. So are they laughing? Are they, you know, looking sad? Are they burying someone in the sand in a morose way? Or are they burying someone in the sand with anger? Are they fighting because there's fear, or are they fighting because there's anger or frustration? So I think it's really important to look beyond what they're playing with and look into how they are playing and what their facial tone is, or what their facial,
Features or
thank you,
expression?
expressions and their tone, their verbalization. That's really going to help you hone in on those feelings. And take that leap of faith, trust yourself, trust the relationship that you have with the child, trust the messages that the child is sending you. And you may get it wrong, and that's okay. I think that sometimes that's almost a gift to give, because then you can say, oh, I made a mistake. And then kids see that grown-ups make mistakes, and there's no such thing as someone who doesn't make mistakes. And I think that's really hard, at least in my area. I don't know about your area, but kids seem to have a very high perfectionist tendency and wanting to do everything right and perfect and very scared of mistakes. And so if I can say I made a mistake, then I made a mistake. And sometimes it's not a mistake, but it doesn't feel safe for the child. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think where I want to like jump off of that, Maggie, is I think we're talking a lot about the how, right? Like in our like
But the what?
well, no, I want to stay with the how, and I think we can go back to the what. But the point about this idea is, are we listening with both our eyes and our ears? And I think that goes back to something that Dr. Landreth and other, the Cochran's and Gurney and other thing really highlight for us, is this idea of we cannot just listen to words with children. We have to be observant and listening with our eyes and ears throughout the session to help guide us here. The other thing is, because we are conditioned societally to use questions, we tend to go into relationships with questions. And my experience has been that once kids hit any type of schooling, they learn that questions have a right answer and a wrong answer. And so
Wait.
they're only going to answer the way they think you want to hear it. So if you say, "Are you angry?" which I don't think is a great example because anger is a complicated emotion, but they may say no because they know that people don't like anger, or maybe other people in their life, they've learned that anger gets them in trouble. So they're going to say no to anger because you ask the questions. But if you reflect it to them, they may sit in that a little bit more. They also might tell you you're wrong and then want to convey to you other ways for you to better understand the emotion that's going on. So are you happy? And they may say yes, even though everything is indicating they're not happy. The example I give often to both parents and to kids is when you're picking your kid up from school and they're dragging their backpack and their head is down and their shoulders are down, and you say, "Did you have a good day at school?" It's such a miss from us listening with our eyes, right? Because that indicates they have not had a good day at school.
Right.
And
And I
that's really
think
what we're like when we highlight those components of getting away from questions, or how was your day at school? It implies that everything they've given you physically is not enough for you to understand them, where that was so much information that we just needed to say, "Looks like you've had a tough day at school."
And I think too, when we think about listening with our eyes and our ears, I do also think that we can, and maybe this is because of like this is a me thing, because I'm an empath, but I can also feel it. You can feel an energy in the room. You know when someone comes in when they're feeling really down. You can feel that. Or at least I can feel that. And especially if someone's frustrated or angry, you tend to be able to kind of, and I know we're using anger, like we're going to go into anger later, but you can feel if there's those feelings, right? You, when someone comes in the room and they're super pumped and excited, it changes the atmosphere, I think. And so really trying to attune yourself to that also, and trusting like all of these things are working together within the relationship. And it's so hard to explain, one, via computer, and two, like you guys are listening, you know, from a radio or wherever it is that you're doing. And you there's no feeling attached to it because we're not together. I forget. Oh, it was Julia Steinem actually was talking about after COVID how like therapy going virtual and all of this stuff. And she was like, yeah, but you can't feel it in the room.
You have to work so much harder to like
Works
tune
so
into
much
that.
harder. And it's really a neat experience if you open yourself up to it and practice that and notice it, because it's something that we're not necessarily taught to notice. I think we do it a lot as kids where we kind of feel and navigate the room around us. And so I think it's also why it's important for us to be calm and grounded in those spaces. And we'll talk about that in a lot of episodes on skills, but opening ourselves up to that for them, for us to feel them,
Yes. And
because it's reciprocal.
Maggie, I keep seeing you like pointing to your whole body, and you know,
Yeah.
one of my I share a lot about is we actually have more than one brain.
Yeah.
We have three brains. We have a heart brain, which is like our relational and emotional connection. That's where we're receiving a lot of that information. And then we also have a gut brain. And you're also talking about like the skin brain, right? Like our skin is pulling in all this information at the same time. And so, and feeding our neural networks all of this information. And we get, I think, taught to only listen, right? Like to ignore these other parts of ourselves. And as a therapist, we want to tune back into all those parts of ourselves, especially as a play therapist, because we are going to rely more on these, all of ourselves holistically in session. And sometimes I giggle when my students are like, "How did you know that?" And I was like, "I was listening with my heart brain." And they're like, they kind of tilt their head and give me like a funny look. And I'm like, "You have one too. You just have to like go back to hearing it. You know, you've been trained to maybe not be as responsive." Or in particular, our gut brain is one that we are conditioned to not listen to. And so sometimes when people ask me why, it just felt right.
Right.
And that means I'm holistically listening to things. I don't have one specific thing that I can point to because I'm taking the child in holistically right now
Yeah.
and responding to them holistically, to what they're presenting to me and how they're playing and all of those components that you're talking about, right? But that's really what's happening as a therapist. We need to tune into all parts of ourselves to be able to share, with the child, how we're understanding them, how we're accepting them, how we really want them to know that they can show up in many of the ways that they need to, and that is okay with me.
And I think it's also the relationship that as you get to know this child through the relationship, then that's going to cue you in. And it doesn't always mean that they're going to be super pumped that you're able to accurately identify their emotions. So, this is a different situation. It's not a client, but with my son, I kind of figured out what's happening, right? And I'm like, you're really upset. He's acting out. And I was like, you're really hurt by the way this friend just talked to you. And that made you feel really uncomfortable. And you're not sure what to do with all of these emotions. And he's like, I hate that you're a play therapist. And it's like,
Let's respond like other moms do.
right. And I was like, he's the worst. Or yell, like, honestly, if I was just another mom, I'd probably just look at the behaviors, not to disparage other parents or caregivers. But I think that sometimes it can feel uncomfortable for kids too when we see them so fully. And so not to try and understand that and the underlying messages of that, as opposed to immediately thinking, oh, I'm wrong, or I should never talk about that again, because there's something there. They're giving you something there that's meaningful and real. And to incorporate that, whether it's into the playroom or it's your conceptualization of this child outside of the playroom, it can be really helpful. And it's something to listen to and take into account as well. So yeah, it's hard because we're talking, we wanted to talk about the what, why, and how. And I'm like, what? I'm like, it's reflecting feelings.
Well, and I think that's the challenge is how do we
How do we
convey
describe
what,
it?
yeah, how do we describe it? And I want to make sure we do that because one thing I have found is that we have to be able to describe this to parents, what we do, why we do it, how's it working, all of those things within our parent consultation, or if you have ever go to court or in other places, and it builds your credibility
Right.
as a therapist to be able to describe them in these ways so that you know it
We're
puts
not
your
just being
expertise, right? It raises your expertise in the sense of communicating that to other people, to build confidence, to build comfort, to build, I've put my kids in the right hands. And so that's why we were kind of going with that format is to kind of help. And For me, if I had to define or how I talk about reflection of feeling, first and foremost, this is like a key skill within person-centered, child-centered. I was always trained that when we look at the triangle, right? Like if you look at the CBT triangle, there's thoughts, behaviors, and feelings, right? A lot of our cognitive approaches are going to hone in on the thought part of it. And sometimes they're also going to hone in on the behavioral part, right? And our behavioral therapists are going to focus in on the behavior first. And that's where you need to go to help shift and make changes. Within the more humanistic and with, in particular, person-centered and child-centered, we think the important skill is the feeling skill. And that's really what we target. So for this is a targeted skill. For child-centered, in the sense that what we're doing and hoping to do is to pick up on the feeling of the child, acknowledge that feeling, right? So we're going to recognize it. We're also going to name it so that we can build emotional literacy for the child and help give them names of the feelings that they may not be able to put into words yet, so that they can communicate, you know, as they grow and develop, that they're also able to communicate that out to other people so they can share it with their teacher, their friends, their parents, and other people. And that helps them, right, to gain better awareness and understanding of, oh, this is what it feels like to blah, blah, blah.
Because it's not just giving them words, right? Which we are, right? We're giving them feeling words, but we're also helping them match their internal experience with a label in some ways, right? I don't like to think of it as labeling, but it gives them a way to express what's happening internally to the external world so it can be better understood. And I find that's really helpful within my own therapy and with adults too, is that sometimes we don't realize. It's the same way as like if you've had a bad day at work and you're overwhelmed and then you snap at your partner or you snap at your dog or your caregivers, right? It's not because they've done anything wrong. I'm responding to my internal experience of feeling overwhelmed and feeling disheartened or whatever those feelings are. And if someone then can respond not to my behavior of yelling and more like, it seems like you had a really tough day or you're feeling really overwhelmed right now. That's going to help me. One, it helps cognitively for me to remember like, hey, wait, this is not their fault. It helps me understand that this person is trusted and understands me and cares to understand me. And then it helps me process what's happening for me internally within that safe relationship. Whereas if I come home and I yell and then they yell back, none of that's happening. None of those internal experiences and processings are happening. And so I think it's helpful if we can think about this for who we are as adults and as humans, it makes us understand a little bit more why we're the importance of doing it with children.
Well, and it helps explain from an adult perspective, right? When I'm talking with parents, I'm sharing about how this might help them, A, have more empathy for where their child is at or what they are doing, and B, that it helps you put yourself in your child's place in this moment and can help better explain maybe what these behaviors are about for your child. So it doesn't become trying to change just behaviors, but it's getting to the root of what is happening for what you're seeing from your child and what your child is experiencing in that moment. And it can help you know how to partner with the child in those moments. Because oftentimes, especially for heavier and harder emotions, what they're really wanting is a partnership. They're not wanting to have to figure it out on their own. They're wanting that attuned individual to come in and really support them through this and let them know that they're not hanging on the thread over a cliff on their own. Because sometimes that's what those big emotions feel like, which is why we have such strong reactions to them.
And I think promoting that emotional literacy, and I'll borrow from Dr. Becky, is kids are born with all of these emotions, but they don't necessarily know how to express them other than behaviorally. They don't have the verbal capacity and knowledge and awareness. And so that's also part of what we're doing is that in play therapy, we're not asking them or requiring them to verbalize. We're allowing them to share themselves within this space and then reflecting back what they're sharing with us through verbalization and the naming of those feelings. And I think it helps them grow also into very emotionally stable and attuned and aware adults, which is really helpful. And it helps them process what's happening for them in the way that they feel comfortable and developmentally appropriate. And so I think that's kind of like the crux of the what it is. I think that, and I think there's some why, but I think if we specifically go into, and perhaps I'm jumping the gun and you have some more things,
No.
like,
The only other thing I was going to add is I think this is also where our therapist's attitudinal conditions within Carl Rogers becomes really important, right? So just to make sure everyone is aware, there are six core conditions to person-centered and child-centered play therapy, right? And there are ones that the child has, and then there's some that are specific to the therapist, and we call those the attitudinal conditions, the ones that are specific to the therapist, which is that idea of empathy. Right. So empathic understanding, unconditional positive regard, which is the non-judgmental part of it, and the ability to attune to what's happening in the moment. Right. So that's part of emotional, or empathic understanding is that I can attune to you. Unconditional positive regard is the non-judgmental. And then Maggie touched on earlier in this series, really knowing yourself. So the congruence of the therapist, those are critical for us to have in session with our clients and to acknowledge. And why congruence is important is it, I need to be careful I'm not projecting something that's really my internal state onto the child. My goal is to mirror the child's internal state in the session. And so we do want to make sure that if I know, I always call it like my suitcase of junk, right? These are my issues. This is, I've had a rough morning, right? All this stuff was happening. And then I have a session with a child. I don't need to project my rough morning and all the chaos and havoc that happened before I got into session with this kiddo. I need to have enough personal awareness to know that that's me. And that's really what congruence is my own personal awareness. So when I'm attuning to the child, I can kind of connect and know, oh, this is coming from the child.
Right.
Or all of a sudden, if I have this rush of anxiety in session, is like, what is that about? And a lot of this is happening unconsciously if you've done your own work. So I don't have to sit there and be like, huh, is this the child? Is this me? Right. Because if I've done my own work, I should have a pretty good sense to be like, whoa, this must be coming from the child because I don't have a lot of anxiety happening in my life right now.
Right. And I think it goes. Two points that you made, I think, are really important is like the last one that you're making about our own stuff and our own junk, right? Because again, kids are really great observers. And so we don't know though, like they're going to be able to pick up on what we bring in if we're not congruent. They're going to be able, like, they're really good, like, lie detectors. And they can figure that out. And so it's really important that we're congruent because we don't know the messages that they will take from that if we're not. And then also going into that unconditional positive regard, I think goes back to some of the concerns that we discussed before about our students and feeling as if they're interpreting or judgmental. Because if we're coming in with that attitudinal condition of unconditional positive regard, there's no judgment placed upon a child for their emotional experiences. And so we may be taking guesses. I don't like the feel, I don't really like the term interpretation because I think that there's a negative connotation with that for some reason. But I think it's really like you are in some ways taking their behaviors and interpreting it to as to what they're feeling,
I
but it's
don't,
not with
see,
just,
it's so interesting. I don't use the word interpretation
I
at
don't like
all.
it. No,
I
I
look at
don't
it
like it.
more as it's not that I'm interpreting, right? I'm making sense of what the child
Right.
is displaying, exhibiting,
You're
behaving, emoting, whatever it is,
making an
in
attempt to
context to
understand.
their world, right?
Right. It's a and
And
it's an
reflecting
attempt
that.
to understand. It's not an attempt to interpret or to judge. And I
No.
think that's the distinction, because that's usually the word that my students use in response to why they shouldn't reflect feelings. And so I think it's like, no, we're working to understand, and we're presenting this unconditional positive regard that there is no judgment coming forth from us based upon what they're receiving. It is us kind of being a mirror to what we are experiencing within that space.
And I
And they
wonder.
have the opportunity to say no.
Oh yeah, and kids will tell you no. They're really good at wanting to be understood to a deep level. But I also wonder if rephrasing that for students and supervisees about, well, what evidence did you have to make that interpretation? Right? So if they're going to stick with the term interpretation, like how did you come to that conclusion? Because an interpretation is really out of left field, right? My mindset, I could be wrong on this, but like for me, when I think of and why I think Maggie and I are having a strong reaction to interpretation is it feels like it's coming out of left field and it implies that you don't have any information. And what I think we're trying to say is that we're wanting out of observation, out of how the child is expressing themselves in the session, right? You are gathering information to be able to respond to what's happening right now for the child. And so it really is a reflection, a mirror of what the person is telling you to be able to, or the child is telling you to reflect back to the child. And that's really what all of these reflection skills really hone in on is this idea of, right? What is happening for this child in their internal state and their way of being, and how do I share that with them to help them build their awareness? If it's either behavioral awareness, emotional awareness, verbal awareness, like whatever that is, how are they conveying things to the world? And let me share that back with them with as much acceptance as possible, so that they can then interpret that without fear of being in trouble, fear of shame or guilt. Right, or punishment, anything like that.
And I think as we're kind of talking about what popped into my mind is like a metaphor of like, we want to be a mirror where we're reflecting back. We've already said that. We don't want to be Oz with a magic ball, like a,
Yeah, we're not a magic mirror, or, you know.
no, we're not like sitting behind a screen, like, there's no like ill intent. It's really just placing back what we are observing in a way that is empathic and kind, with unconditional positive regard. And I think that's really important to hone in on, like, what and how the purpose of this. And then, but I do think like it's important to explore really more in depth how this is also deepening, like from a child-centered perspective, deepening the relationship, right? Because we're validating and normalizing those emotions, and we are helping the child know that this is real and valid and important, and that we see them, and that it's understandable, that it's accepted. And again, like what you just said, we don't want there to be shame or guilt projected onto them in those spaces, that these emotions are okay and important, and that we value them.
100%. And I think as someone really understands you and hears you at a deep level, there a lot more safety happens in the relationship and you feel honored in a different way. And I often think about this as, like who are those relationships in your life as a student, as a professional that you can go to and just be truly 100% yourself, the good, the bad, the ugly, the great, like all of the pieces of you. And you know that person's going to receive you in the same way. They may not love some of those things, but they're not changing their judgment of you based on one bad experience or maybe a week of having a really tough time or even a phase of your life where, you're harder to deal with, that they still love you unconditionally. And that really is what child-centered play therapy is about in the space, so that we can show up authentically. We can show up transparently. We can show up, right? And bring all of that and still feel valued, appreciated, treasured, prized, as Dr. Sue Bratton says. And the importance of having people who treasure and prize you in your life is game changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're hoping to provide. And reflection of feelings are one of those things that many people will judge in the world, right? And maybe not accept. And therefore, we need to make sure that we are accepting those, giving space for that in the playroom, allowing children to express that. Because sometimes we bottle it up for a long time and then it comes out in really weird ways, or you have a lot of internal strife and anxiety, and it can hit us in lots of ways. And so we want to be able to provide space for kids to be able to have a sensitive space and a space that is really accepting of these of their emotional states, their internal states, with a lot of safety.
And I think as we talk about it, there are a lot of things that kids are coming to therapy for. Like they're coming to see us for a lot of different things. And sometimes they don't necessarily feel safe talking to the other adults in their lives about these things, whether it be abuse that's occurred or divorce or understanding things that are happening. And so, what a gift it is that we can give them the space that they can do that without judgment, but also what a gift it is for us that a child or any person trusts us to that level to share who they are. And then the gift that we give back is that we accept them for that. And I think it's really important. I like looking at it that way. And even when I talk with adults, when they share something really big that they perhaps haven't shared with other people, I thank them. And I may not say thank you in the playroom, but I hope my intent is to share with them how much I value and prize them and their experiences and what they share with us. And so I do think that that's really highlights why we do this to a really deep level from our belief system and our theoretical orientation.
And the other reason we do this from a philosophical reason is that, like, if we look at the conditions of worth that sometimes are placed upon us, we're using a lot of theory words today with reflection of feeling, but this idea of, based on the relationships I've been in and the environments I've been in, I've learned about how the world will accept me. And so even though I might have experiences that the people in my life may not accept, I will alter who I am for the acceptance and for the relationship. Even if those things that are being told that I can't do or I shouldn't feel or whatever it is, right? The things that are not being accepted, even if they're really important to me, I'm willing to make that adaptation for the relationships and for love and acceptance from other people. And that's really what causes us anxiety, is that, right, that altering of ourselves, our internal states, our internal locus of control, or our internal locus of evaluation is what is causes us anxiety, depression, challenges in our world. And so in by offering a space where they can feel accepted, where they can feel valued and treasured, and all of them, even these things that other people don't accept, they can then kind of recalibrate internally to be like, oh, maybe Miss So-and-so, right, just has a hard time with anger. It's not that I can't be angry. It's just maybe in relationship with Miss So-and-so that anger is less acceptable, right? And so they can reevaluate these things that they've had to alter themselves and figure out how do they maneuver the world and still be okay internally, right? And so that's really what we're trying to do in the therapeutic relationship. And from a CCPT perspective, emotions for us are those things that we will alter ourselves, and sometimes it'll influence our behaviors. We really see the emotional component of a child to be the most influential thing, right? And so you've heard Maggie and I talk about, like, what's at the root of this, right? It typically has some type of emotional component to it, a feeling about who you are, dun, 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 because that goes back to this idea of conditions of worth. So within reflecting of feelings, what we're saying is we want you to be the evaluator of that, not us to be the evaluator of that. So instead of changing and splitting yourself or altering who you are, we want you to have this insight, this awareness, right? so that you can feel more regulated when you are experiencing that instead of having to alter who you are or how you view yourself. So that's the other thing that happens with conditions of worth is it gives us a message like I'm a bad kid when I'm angry or if I'm not perfect, right? Like all of those messages that we hear inside ourselves and maybe have inadvertently been shared with us by the people who love us the most or support us the most or care for us as we're being raised, that then we internalize that as something that's bad. And so this idea of reflecting a feeling releases that for you to reevaluate it, to gain better understanding of you, not a behavior, not a feeling, but who you are holistically. I feel like I just yammed on for a long time, but
No, but I think it's also, no, I think it's helpful and it's important and it's, I value that in
thank
that.
you.
You're very passionate and excited about what it is that you do and sharing this with the world so that they can understand it. And I think you are very much immersed holistically in this and truly believe in it. And I think that's really important for everybody to hear. And it's something that I really like about you.
Thanks.
Not that my external.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I also want to say that in ways that like I try to share with parents because I just shared it with you guys as therapist or as students becoming therapist, right? Or therapist in training, play therapist in particular in training. So when I share that with parents, right? Like I talk about kids are always internalizing information and they are perceiving that information that it sends messages about how they should be, what they should do, and how they should act in the world. And sometimes it gets so internalized that it becomes the message that they tell themselves. And so, what we're doing in therapy, right, through skills like reflecting feeling, is that we're allowing them a chance to reevaluate those in a safe space, in a relationship that they have a lot of trust, that they value, so that they can release some of those things that are causing them a lot of anxiety or whatever the reason this child is being brought to me, right? Our hope is to kind of release that by helping them realign how they're internalizing messages that they're hearing from the world and from the people who love them in the world to make sure that they're not misinterpreting messages that you're sending. And that's really what we do in therapy, and that's what this skill in particular is meant to do, to kind of hone in for kids to be able to reevaluate, to learn how to handle and organize intense feelings, emotions, experiences. And what we find is when they're able to do that, then they can handle things in more positive ways. Sometimes we call those pro-social behaviors, but that we can handle them in ways that the world wants to see instead of in
The
ways
world
that
can
maybe
understand.
are more challenging for the world to understand and see from children or adults or teens or anyone.
All of the above.
Yeah.
No, I think that's,
So that's kind of how I interpreted it for parents out of like the theory-laden pieces of it. And I do think as a therapist, those are important things for us to think about is how do I understand it theoretically, because that's my conceptualization. And then how do I write my conceptualization for the layperson, right? Which is the non-therapist in the world. So I just wanted to kind of demonstrate that really briefly.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think people appreciate it. Well,
So
thank you, Christy.
thanks, Maggie. And don't forget to like this video, share it with friends and colleagues, supervisees, or parents that you think could benefit from hearing any of this stuff, and
And
visit
have
our
a fun one.
website. And if you have a topic or you want to share something, please email us at info@playtherapyspace.com. We do check that regularly. You can also do Christy@playtherapyspace.com or Maggie@playtherapyspace.com if you want to share something with us or convey a message. We do like hearing from you, so please let us know.
Yeah. Well,
All right,
thanks,
y'all.
Chris.
Have a great day.
Bye.